Into the meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, February 27, 2012, at 6:05 p.m. Please take a look at the minutes from the January 23rd meeting and let me know if they meet with your approval. Okay, good. Dan?
Looks good, Bob.
Okay, thank you. And we'll move on to the next order of business this evening, which is the 2012 classroom furniture purchases. As you know, the district annually goes out to bid for equipment furniture, classroom furniture. Typically, we begin this process about this time every year. What we love to do is just make the Finance Committee aware of the fact that we are going out to bid. It has not been past practice where we take it through the three-step process of board of Finance Committee review, board discussion, and action in terms of going out to bid for classroom equipment. So that's the way we proceeded this year. We're providing you with an update with the anticipation of receiving your support for next year's rollout. Actually, we would plan on going out to bid within the next couple of weeks. As a matter of fact, it states March 8th. There's a calendar on your board report there where we'll post the advertisement and go out to bid. Just to give you a little idea, the annual purchases are a function of the age and obsolescence plan that was put together a few years back. And these are items that have been identified previously as well as new items that we hear from the buildings. We're usually around the first of the year, I'll send out an email to all the building principals requesting that if they have any pressing classroom needs that they should send them back to us, which we've just received in the past couple of weeks for purchase over the summer. Additionally, we have, as you know, we rolled out the 21st Century Classroom earlier this year. As a matter of fact, we painted Lincoln last year during the summer, and then we rolled out 8 classrooms, 2 at each of the elementary schools. That actually occurred in the fall with implementation over Thanksgiving break. So what we've tried to do this year is go forward, and what I can do basically is talk about some of the needs that we've had. I'll tell you first of all about the fixed seating in the Hadley Auditorium. This has been on the Hadley request for, I would say, the past 2 or 3 years. If you yourself were to go to in
3 decades.
Huh?
Those chairs were there when I went to Hadley.
Okay, so there, what year was that, Steve?
Me too.
Late 70s.
Okay, so they're about 30 years old. So I would say they are definitely looking for a replacement. And not only are they in need of replacement because of the age and obsolescence of the equipment, but also the fact that that area, that what we call the pods, is being used much different than I believe it's in original anticipated use was for, which was probably pretty much just for auditorium use and things of that nature. We actually have classes in what we call Pod A and Pod D, which are on each side of that auditorium. They're using for classrooms. Brian Wonkowski uses one for regular education. And then one of the gentlemen that are involved in the band program, he has classes in the other pod. So they're actually being used for classroom space also. So I have had preliminary meetings with a couple of different vendors. We're going to be arriving at our final decision in terms of what that will look like. But what we're looking to do is tear out that existing set seating, if you will, fixed seating, take that out, fix the floors, replace any tiles that need to be replaced, and then we'll put in sort of a more useful type of seating. Generally speaking, there's about 55 seats in each pod. My plan is to put about 35 seats in there for educational purposes and then match it with the same type of seating, another 20 to 25 chairs. So there will be, we can accommodate up to 55 seats. But only 35 or so will be used with for regular education. What those chairs are, it's a black plastic chair that will sit on, well, obviously, 4 legs, but it'll also have a fold-up type of tablet arm so the kids can take notes. It'll also be flexible in that the arms can be up for regular education. They can be down for the kids that are going to be involved in musical practice or band practice or something like that. I anticipate using district personnel to remove those chairs and and fix the floor. I don't anticipate any type of other major investment in that particular project. Next,
will the replacements be permanent chairs in there?
No, they will be
stackable.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we're looking at something much more flexible that can be taken up, you know, put in place, taken up, moved. Let the kids, if they don't want to have an arm up to take notes or whatever the case may be, they can set it down. In other words, provide a great, more deep, much more flexibility in the space instead of everybody having to sit in those pod chairs and fixed plastic seating chairs. So we're looking for flexibility. Okay? The next request here for this evening is the continued rollout of the replacement of existing student desks and chairs at Hadley. We moved to, this would actually be the fourth year of implementation, and we may be right at that saturation point in terms of replacing all of the desks and chairs for regular education. These are a flat top desk that can be moved around and provides flexibility if the kids want to gather in small groups. If the teacher would like to keep them lined up in rows, you know, it provides greater flexibility than what was there as little as 4 years ago. These would be complete student desk chairs. They are not fixed to one another, and the approximate cost for that is $33,000. And my anticipation is that will probably come back less because we're talking about 8 classrooms, but I think there's going to be something less than that by the time we actually get out there and purchase those items. Thirdly, we have the continued rollout of the 21st Century Classroom. This year, we would like to roll out 24 classrooms. As you know, we started later last year in terms of 8 classrooms, 2 classrooms in each of the elementary school buildings for a total of 8. This year, we would give consideration to ramping it up to 6 additional classrooms at each building. Last year we spent about $63,000 for all the furniture within the classroom itself, which includes student desks and chairs, some variable type of seating, flexibility if some teachers wanted desks versus all, some wanted a mixture of tables, and desk versus all desk. We also have included in that new teacher desk and chairs. As you know, we've met with the various groups. We met with them last winter, just before break, I believe, in December. We also brought that group back together last week and just had a conversation regarding our likes and dislikes. Overall, I would say that the opinions are very strong in favor of the equipment that was selected. There are some tweaks that we're looking at, but given the comments that we've heard, we feel as though what we've implemented is appropriate, best interest in terms of educational needs for the kids, and we certainly have received favorable comments from what I understand, the kids, parents, staff in the building. And then finally, I generally just include about $15,000 for other miscellaneous requests that I have coming from the buildings. An example of that would be file cabinets, a miscellaneous desk or chair, or just things like that that maybe aren't identified or weren't identifiable when this report was written, but rather I would like to budget for in the future as we roll out the coming 2013 budget. So as I stated previously, the timeline for this is March 8th, we would post the bids. March 30th, the bids would be due back. March 9th, I'll bring a recommendation to the Finance Committee. April 9th, I'll bring a recommendation to the Finance Committee. April 23rd, I'll bring a recommendation for the board for discussion. And then on May 14th, we would like action from the board in terms of accepting the bids. Additional cost and information. Last year, the cost that was included in the carpet rollouts was about $1,400 a classroom for a total cost of about $33,600. We have found that this carpet is, everybody seems to like it. We had a lot of favorable comments about them. I don't really recall any negative comments, so I think everyone is happy with the recommendations and implementation that they've gone thus far. So the recommendation is that we would continue to roll out the 21st Century Classroom, as well as annual renewal of our furniture request for a total of $257,100. with estimated cost of flooring cost of $33,600 for a total commitment of $290,700. Are there any questions?
Hey Bob, or, Bob, this is Dan.
Yep.
I know I had asked a question earlier with regards to the timeline, and mainly it was around the 21st century classroom.
Uh-huh.
My only question was, I just had a concern without discussing with the board before going to bid, and that was just based on if we were going to have to be, you know, if there was dollars spent to prepare bid documents for that.
No.
But I understand if there's not, then... that's my understanding, I guess.
That is correct. My department will prepare all the bid documents for the painting, for the for the equipment purchases, classroom equipment purchases for the coming fiscal year, as well as the painting documents for the continued rollout of the painting program for the balance of the elementary schools.
Okay, thanks.
You know, Dan, one of the questions that you asked earlier was, If we were accelerating this project, you know, in extreme or more than we had anticipated, and I would say we're not accelerating it more quickly than we anticipated. We're certainly doing it more quickly than last year, where we just chose two classrooms at each building. But if we were to go at that pace, only two classrooms at each building, we'd all be, you know. The furniture in the first year would be pretty old by the time we finished all the classrooms. So we really need to have a pace that's somewhat like this in order to get all of the furniture implemented in a three-year period.
In our original, during our original discussion, it was asked how long the anticipated rollout would take, and I indicated 3 to 5 years. This would fit right in perfectly in a 3 to 4 year range.
Yeah, that's what I was... I was reviewing the old meeting notes and information on this, and we had talked about a several-year implementation. So it just seemed like it was picking up speed, and just wondering if we had seen, you know, earlier successes. You know, I just want to make sure that, you know, we've had this furniture in place for 2 months. Is that enough time to get the feedback we need?
It's been in place 4 months, and we, you know, I indicated to you earlier, we just met with the all of the teachers of the 21st century classrooms last week, and that was one of our agenda topics. And they gave Bob some good feedback on things they liked really well and some of the things they liked a little less well. But overall, they would not make any changes in the selection of the equipment or the desks at all, or the furniture in the classroom at all, except to look for a smaller size desk, same shape, a little smaller size if you can find that.
For especially towards first and second graders. And then,
or and smaller classrooms.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. A smaller footprint of the desktop.
Yeah.
So we'll continue to review that. I just wanted to present this to the Finance Committee this evening. We'll be making final sort of determinations in terms of what equipment we'll actually be going out to bid for, but this gives a pretty good summary of what our intentions are. And so that's what we're looking to sort of finish up in the next week or so.
I have just a very quick question. So this furniture could potentially go anywhere from a first grade class all the way to a fifth grade class.
That's what we have now.
We have every grade except kindergarten and second grade with the furniture in it right now.
Is it more expensive at the lower with the, or is it the same if it's a first grade or a fifth grade?
You know, just to give you an example, we bought two different sized chairs last year, a 13 and a 15, or a 15 and a 17 inch chair. They were the same price.
Okay.
So I'm anticipating there may be some minor cost adjustments because of one size versus another, but I don't anticipate any major cost additions or reductions.
But the one piece of furniture that might be prohibitive that they really like is the chair on wheels.
Yeah.
And we have to look into that to see what the difference is between the chair that's stationary and the chair on wheels. But
my
we all love the chair on wheels.
And right now we have the chair on wheels used at the computer
kind of lab centers.
Yeah, like the lab center.
Okay. Well, I just want to build on that. What was the feedback with regards to the new system where kids don't have the desk? You know, they keep their things in a bin or something. What have you guys heard about that?
From what I've heard, it was really very positive. Every child has a chair, but you know, coming from someone who does not have a career in education, I was just really impressed with the comments that were coming from our staff. Particularly the fact of the personal accountability that these kids have, even at a young age, in terms of knowing who to sit with, who not to sit with, when, you know. It just kind of amazed me, some of the comments that were coming from the teachers about how the kids themselves are accountable or holding themselves accountable for where they seat themselves in a class. So,
what we also heard about the bins, Dan, was that like the teachers who had to really pare down the stuff that they were carrying around, so did the kids. And so they've made, as a class, you know, we're making choices about what do we need to keep in the bins, what do we not need to keep in the bins, and their organization system. Each school has a slightly different one, but what was kind of cute at the last meeting was one group of teachers from one building going, oh, you color-coded it like that. I'm going to do that. I'm going back tomorrow and doing that. So they have really responded well to the bins. Now, the one suggestion was for next year, if you have a class larger than 24, because the bin holds 24 trays, that we do kind of just an additional little stack on top where maybe two or three extra trays could go into that. But they feel that the teachers feel that it has, again, built that level of responsibility on the part of students. It has helped in the sense that it's not just a desk I have. I take my learning stuff with me wherever I go, and I move to different places around the room, and they've had very positive responses to that.
Yeah, I was trying to have, my son's in one of these classrooms, mm-hmm. but couldn't get much out of them, but I didn't know if you know, if there were some students that, you know, I'm trying to, you know, like lack of stability, but, you know, there's just some people, well, they like to have their own home, you know, and know that that's mine and I can count on that being there every day. Didn't know if, you know, if there was any comments around
that. Haven't heard anything about that. We have heard, perhaps related to that, is that sometimes students need a place for themselves to work quietly and alone, not in a collaborative group. And okay. So in one class, and I believe it might be your son's classroom, she was looking for ways to create a desk configuration that would allow maybe a couple students to have those quiet spaces and how to create just that area.
Okay. And I did find out that the articulate kid you were talking to was not my son.
Oh.
He was at the library at the time.
Oh, he was. Okay. Well, there was another articulate child there then.
Any more questions?
Thanks, Bob.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
So we'll be going out to bid then next week, and we'll bring you a final recommendation in late March. The next order of business then is 2012 and 13 student fees. This is a report and a recommendation that we bring to the Finance Committee and to the Board annually. What we've suggested is that we maintain the basic and activities fees as they have been in place. I would say it's probably been 4 years since we've raised fees, Phyllis.
At least.
I would say it's been 4 years since we've raised fees, and my recommendation is that we just continue to maintain the current fee structure. We'll be bringing, obviously, this is at the Finance Committee this evening. We'll be bringing it to the Board on March 12th for discussion and April 9th for action. Are there any questions?
The question was, I think Dan asked the question, how much do we bring in annually in student fees? And you responded to him with approximately, what, $315,000 or something like that?
$350,000.
$350,000?
We collect approximately $350,000 annually.
Well, What was the, now is that the combination of basic and activity? For some reason, the figure $35,000 is sticking in my head from previous years. Maybe I'm just off by
maybe $350,000.
Maybe you're just off by a zero.
I must be.
I know that's what we budgeted for student fees, around $350,000, $360,000, and I believe we're right up at around the $350,000 mark this year.
Maybe yearbook or something.
Yeah.
It was a flow through.
That kind of bit might have been it.
Any other questions?
Bob, is there a correlation between the student fees and expenses on those projects or those programs?
No. So they don't cover? Those fees do not cover the cost of a particular program. They just supplement the revenue that we dedicate to that. I would say we don't have any programs within the district that are just completely self-sufficient.
Have a yearbook or something.
Yeah, that's a pass-through.
The pass-through fees are set so that they, you know, if we're charged $8 for a lock, then we charge the students $8 for a lock. We're charged $4.50 for a recorder. But those pass-through, we try to keep in line with that. But we're really close. But the basic fees for kindergarten, ECE, grade 1 through 5, or 1 through 5 and 6 through 8, those are just, that's a fee just to, as a revenue source to add to the revenue to run the district in general. There's no...
Very basic fee.
It's a very basic fee.
Wouldn't even begin to cover the cost of the program.
And then the activity fees are also the same. There's no direct correlation because if you look at it, a sliding scale, first fee, first activity I'm in, it's $30, and if I'm in the second activity for the year, then it's reduced. You know, by the time I get to a fourth activity for the year, I'm paying like $3 or something. I get to participate. So there's no direct relationship.
Any other questions? Then the next order of business this evening is a 2011 capital project reconciliation. Last summer, as you know, we brought a recommendation to the board, and we had essentially three separate projects or groups of projects that we brought to the board. Project one was a summer capital projects. This included entry door replacement at Churchill, the large gym, replacement of sidewalks and paving at Lincoln and Franklin. We did replacement of the main entrance at Bryant Avenue and flooring in the front hallway of Franklin. Interior painting of Lincoln. The second project was the Hadley Courtyard. And then finally, the third project that I've identified was the Franklin Entry and Lead Abatement. We bid the project, the summer capital projects, we bid the reconstruction of the Franklin Avenue entrance as part of summer capital project, but there was another project that had to be done prior to that, and that was the lead abatement. And there was a recommendation to the board, and the board did approve that. So if you look over in the attached spreadsheet, we had another nice year in terms of what our expenditures were with regards to budgets. And I just wanted you to keep in mind that the Hadley Courtyard and the Franklin Entry Lead Abatement Project, those are completely finished and paid off. Over the Christmas break, we had some sort of pickup work that needed to be done in terms of all the Franklin entrance and some other minor work. I did not pay out the contractor because I just wanted to make sure that all the work was done in accordance to our requirements. And so, as an example, we had some additional work at Franklin, the front door, as well as there was some problems getting in the Churchill doors at the GMA entrance. So that from those projects just occurred over the Christmas break. I've asked for final pay application documents. From what I understand from a meeting last week, those are sitting at the architect's office for final review. So I don't know if I need to run through these expenditures. The Project 1 summer capital projects came in under budget substantially, but there are still some outstanding bills. Pardon me?
That was a lot of the painting.
Pardon me?
That was a lot of the painting.
Well, that was Churchill gym door replacement. That was all the concrete work and paving work at Lincoln and Franklin. That was the main entranceway at Franklin. There were a lot of different projects that were wrapped up in that group of projects that were bid, and that Light Construction was the successful bidder on those projects. As you can see, then we came in substantially under budget, and the capital projects, Hadley Courtyard came in slightly over budget, about $2,600, and then the Franklin entry, the construction cost came in as what was bid, and then the professional fees associated with that, those were bid documents. We actually contract with Concept 3 to do our asbestos or lead abatement work. So those are the fees that they charged us in connection with that project. So overall, we had a successful summer. All of the projects have now been completed. Again, we're waiting for final payouts, but basically the finances came in very, very well again this year.
What's the outstanding payouts total?
Maybe $15,000, maybe $17,000.
Is that a cross project number one?
That's a cross project number one, correct.
Yeah, I was I reviewed some of our old our information from last year on this, and it made me wonder if you can help me out. There was one for Hadley parking lot or something for like $25,000, $35,000. Did we not go ahead and do that?
The Hadley parking lot?
The east parking lot?
Yeah,
that was done in 2010, I believe.
Was that done when they did the three bathrooms?
Yes, it was, but that was bid as two separate projects. You had Light Construction that did the three classroom addition in Hadley, and then you had R.J. Morse Construction did the capital projects for 2010. Two different contractors, two different reconciliations that were provided to
the board. The same year.
Both in the same year.
Yeah, it was.
So the last time, Dan,
go ahead. What were you?
Well, I just was trying. I didn't know. The information I was looking at all of our old bid approvals and project approvals, because I was trying to compare it to refresh my memory, and that was one that I couldn't find what had happened to that. So I didn't know if we just got the bid and didn't like it, so didn't move forward or what.
I'm trying to get back parking lot, maybe?
I think
we did a back parking lot at Hadley in 2010.
And the east, all the way along the east.
The east property line.
Property line. So I'm not sure, unless I don't remember us talking about Hadley parking lot last summer.
Oh, you know what you might be thinking about? How about the delivery door at the back of Hadley?
Yes, that's it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
you
we
know,
didn't do that.
We just, you know, I didn't take anything out to bid. As a matter of fact, Ed, our director of buildings and grounds, he called our roofing contractor. They came in and just as a course of normal business, we repaired the roof over there. And I think he's done some minor tuck pointing and so forth. So I present that to you sort of as a worst case scenario. As it turned out, it was a better case scenario, and we didn't spend nearly the dollars that we had anticipated.
Okay, great. Yeah, no, it was interesting when I was also comparing back that if you recall, we had one bid that was for $551,000 even.
Right.
But that company realized they didn't do the Franklin entrance.
That's correct.
So I just found it interesting to see this actual expenditure of $551,162, so I didn't know if they had them do the work or what.
He would have come right in on the money, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
That is interesting, though.
So,
okay.
No, this is great. Thanks, Bob.
Okay. So if I get any, you know, when we make that final payout, the Light Construction for those projects, I'll send the finance committee a note letting you know what the final payout was. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, then the next order of business this evening is the continuation of the pre-K program, and I'm going to leave that conversation up to Ann.
Well, we're bringing you, as I think our policy requires, that if a program is funded in part or wholly, which none of them are, by a grant, and that grant disappears, that the board will allow the program to continue for one more year before it makes a decision. And I sent you a spreadsheet, though I have a little better, more readable version of it. And Dan, if your version that you have that I sent via email is okay for you to read, Then the other one, this change is just cosmetic. But if you would like the other one, which is in landscape rather than portrait, I can ask Maureen to send that to you now.
Sorry, electronic's fine.
Okay.
I mean, I can see it fine.
We really were just beginning to enter the conversation with you, and Dan, thank you for the questions that you asked this morning. Hopefully this gives you some level of response to those questions about the cost of the program. And we put together just a brief narrative about the overview of the program and the students that are served in our pre-K at risk program. Excuse me. And the cost of the program currently, as well as the cost over the last 10 years for that program. And of course, it's grown, it's doubled in size as the revenues also doubled for us from the state. We've received or vouchered just a small amount of money that we haven't received yet to cover some minor costs in the program, but basically the program is no longer funded by the state. There is, you know, Governor Quinn has said that this is an important program to him, but whether or not any resources will be added in the budget development is yet to be seen. We don't know whether it will be or not. He's indicated it's a priority, but the budget is basically flat, so there'd have to be a reallocation of resources to put into pre-K. And Julie, they were talking about making it, if there was money, would they make it competitive again? Have you heard anything of that nature?
Well, the last time I checked with the state, which was a few weeks ago, they said they didn't talk about whether it'd be competitive or not. They just didn't know whether there would be any additional funds available or not.
Unless there was it became a block grant or a flat grant again.
And they moved the birth of the tree also,
mm-hmm.
which we did receive.
Mm-hmm. So it remains to be seen what may happen to any kind of funding for the program. We would ask the board to give consideration to continuing the program. We think it's in the best interest of our students. We're at least currently able to fund the program without deprivation to any of our other programs this year. And given the way that we've conserved and organized our resources, we think we could continue to operate the program into the foreseeable future, and believe that it's in the best interest of our students, who are highest at risk, to be given that early education opportunity. We obviously want some discussion with the Finance Committee before we take it on to the board for discussion. And as I said to Drew this morning, we would not necessarily need to take a formal vote on this if there's board support. If there's not board support or there's not unanimity, then we would bring a proposal to continue the program within, you know, some kind of cost figure. So this is the first opportunity for us to discuss, get questions from you, and then have some time to put some answers together to those questions for our next meeting, when we would bring this forward to the full board.
Did I read correctly that you have a grant currently covering the birth to three?
Right. That, as Julie just noted, that became a competitive grant this year as well, and so we were awarded. The cost of that is really pretty minimal. And we used to have two parent educators. When the grant was reduced by about half, we reduced to one parent educator this year.
Actually, the grant was increased.
Was it?
It's still a very small grant, but the state actually tripled what they gave.
Oh.
Because
so did we increase?
Because we were not providing what they consider
just the opposite.
Service. So we had to up it to,
That's right. Now I remember.
$34,000.
Which only covers the parent coordinator's salary and benefits only.
And our parent educators were only working. We had two people working as part-time, very part-time parent educators.
Right, and you had to have the person be a half-time, less than half-time.
That's right.
And then how do we determine that a child would be suited for this program?
Well, as you can see in the narrative, there's a list of at-risk characteristics.
Oh, right. I guess how would we identify?
Those students are screened through our screening process.
But how do they even come to your attention if they're not in kindergarten yet?
Yeah, we are required by law, under the IDEA law, which is a special education law, to do child find. That means you have to actively seek children who are at risk of not being ready for school at 5 years old, and that you must screen them, and if they need special services, provide those special services. Now, that's the law around special education. These students who are in the pre-K at risk go through that same process and those screenings, but they have an additional, or within that screening, there are risk factors that are weighted. And so those factors are used to determine whether or not where they are in the list to be at pre-K at risk program if they are not identified as special education and are going to be in early childhood.
Is that through a survey or something?
It's a screening. So it's the students come in here and they go through about 4 stations with our therapists.
I guess how would a child know to go there for a screening?
We partner with other social service agencies in the area and other organizations that have connections to at-risk families.
Okay.
And so there are referrals that way, that we are aware of siblings of our existing students.
Uh-huh.
And
word of mouth.
There's a lot of cross-pollination to find these students, and then they're contacted, and there's a questionnaire the parents fill out about the student. And the students develop mental characteristics, and also about the family and all the family situation, the total family income, there are questions around the stability of the family and that kind of thing that provides a full picture of the child's environment and development.
Okay.
Which is very similar to how we screen students for special education.
And then how is it determined if they have to pay tuition or if they get funded?
Our tuition based children are part of the blended early childhood program that we just began 2 years ago. And those are typically developing children. They do not qualify for pre-K at risk. They pay tuition like they would if they were going to another preschool.
DC and at risk are different programs.
Early childhood and at-risk are different programs. Early childhood is for students who have been identified and have an IEP. They've been identified as having special needs.
And they're paid for on special ed funds.
Right.
Neither
the pre-K at-risk students nor our early childhood students pay tuition. The tuition students are only in the blended model, and that's the nature of the blended model, that you have 5 special needs students, 5 to 10 at-risk students, and another 5 typically developing students.
Okay, and when you talk, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And the typically developing students are the tuition students.
And the on the second paragraph at the bottom, it looks like 75% of kids who go through the program get transition into kindergarten?
No. This is of the 75 children we currently have right now in the program, 57 of them will go to kindergarten. The rest of them would be 3-year-olds.
There's 3 and 4 year olds.
It's 3 and 4 year olds.
Okay. Do we have any numbers that tell us of the children that go through the program, what percentage transition to the kindergarten?
We can look up those numbers for you. I don't know that we would have percentages. Most of them transition to kindergarten with us. By the time we are in third grade with those students, not that large percentage remains. We might have anywhere from a third to fewer students still in the system by third grade.
Okay.
because they've moved on to other schools, school districts. I mean, the part of the nature of an at-risk family is that they may not own a home. You know, poverty is a part of their makeup. Language is a part of their makeup, and so they may have moved on to other schools by that time.
And that's after from kindergarten to.
Some stay with us all the way through, but that number gets smaller as they get older.
What do our feeder districts have similar to this program?
The other Lombard feeder districts?
Yeah.
We don't have feeder districts.
Sorry, like 89?
Yeah. 89 has a pre-K program that is like ours in that it's a blended. They have a tuition-based program as well as early childhood and at-risk. I don't know. Marquardt, I don't think, offers preschool, pre-K.
I guess my question is, the funding from the state applies to all districts. It's not just the economic parameters of our district don't qualify us.
Well,
no pre-K in the state is going to get a grant next year?
Many did.
It was competitive this year.
Okay.
And so some districts did get money this year. We did not qualify.
Okay. What about Wheaton 200?
I couldn't tell you if they received money or not. We'd have to call districts to see if they applied. Number one, we don't know who applied. We don't know who got them, but we could inquire in terms of who applied and who got one.
Right.
Are all of these students provided transportation? Are there some that can walk or parents?
Preschool is. Transports all students, but students who would be within the 1 mile marker would get transportation, but they may not take it. I mean, their parents may bring them.
Okay,
but they're all. But theoretically,
yes.
The transportation is provided.
Yes.
At the district as well.
Yes.
I was just wondering if there was opportunities to partner with the district. I don't know if there's anything. That what it would really save. I mean, it looks like these sections are fairly full. Mm-hmm. And we got people on waiting lists, so it's not like we got half a class, they got half a class, let's work together.
No, and, you know, at one point we did talk with District 89 about the possibility of a shared pre-K program. And we did that really exploration around space. But it was not, the cost of transporting kids and the cost of moving kids over there and the actual space they had and how far our students were going to have to travel, I think it was going to have to be to Arborview, which is the furthest away from our district. It wasn't a good match.
So, and also, you know, just another question on the space. Mm-hmm. So there's six sections. Does that mean there's three classrooms?
Correct.
That are being occupied?
Correct.
So three for the two buildings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two at Forest Glen and one over at Churchill. And two, you know, remember that those classrooms over at Forest Glen are blended classrooms. So we would probably still need the two classrooms at Forest Glen, at least a classroom and a half, if it was a self-contained program, because there would be too many students for just two sections. We would need at least three sections, so you'd have a day and a half of two classrooms anyway.
But was that one time one of these classrooms over at Lincoln?
Yes. Yes, we moved the Lincoln to Churchill 3 years ago now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we could have a bilingual classroom, since so many of our students were Spanish-speaking pre-K students. And that's where they were coming from. And then we moved the early childhood program over to Forest Glen because we were losing the guided instructional program over there. The kids were moving up and out, so we moved the early childhood program over there. And that took us really a couple years to do. That was a tough move.
And what is the students that pay for tuition? Is this the $250 a month?
Correct.
Okay. This is three, is it 3 days a week? 2 days.
No, it's 5 days a week.
5 days a week, that's right. It used to be four.
It used to be four.
It used to be 4 days a week, now that it's five.
Any other questions?
In terms of the staff, I mean, if the program would go away, then is that staff certified to teach kindergarten and first grade or other things, or is that just staff we lose?
Well, they are qualified. They have an early childhood endorsement, which would allow them to teach primary grades. They would be released in a reduction, obviously. Whether or not we'd have openings for them to return would be dependent upon staffing.
So they're only hired as pre-K teachers? That's what I'm saying. I thought, you know, that there's, isn't there, I don't know if this is what the Senate Bill 7, but isn't there seniority and other things that if there's a reduction in force, you can.
They would go into that whole pile, yes.
Okay. If,
assuming, but Jeff, but that's assuming that others in that grouping are going to fall below them. Which, at least in this year, that won't occur because we have everybody in the proficient category. Since we don't evaluate, we don't have an evaluation schedule that has excellent, satisfactory. If you recall, we have a waiver from the state for giving ratings for teachers, and so until we institute ratings, all of our teachers for this year will be in that proficient category.
But to me, I mean, I really do want to know what our peer districts are doing if they're in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially in Wheaton, Naperville. I mean, I'm surprised Marquardt doesn't offer any, given their demographics. I
think the reason that they don't is because of their demographics. They would have so many more students than they could possibly serve.
Okay. So, based on, you know, where you live a block away. If you live in 41, then
you may have those services.
But they're not paid for by the state anymore.
That's correct.
They were paid by the state for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So
any other district? Wheaton, Naperville?
Well, I'm just
and
curious.
And Glenbard. I mean,
I know it doesn't for pre-K.
No,
but
I
haven't seen on their AFR anything related to it.
Yeah.
Do the
I know,
you know, like
Wheaton just built a new early childhood center in there.
And Naperville too.
Naperville, I know, did a brand new building.
Yeah.
Wheaton's is over on the west side.
They
of
have the old. They have an old school, don't
yeah.
they? They use.
Yeah,
they want to build a new building.
Dan, did you have a question?
I was just curious. You know, I know it doesn't the Park District. I mean, there's lots of places that do pre-K. I understand our focus is on the at-risk. Just didn't know if there's any partnerships that help us out with this.
There aren't. All of those that you just mentioned are profit-making, you know, preschool organizations. So maybe they have a scholarship student here and there. Head Start is another program that's federally organized, and we have agreements with Head Start, but that would be a partnering that would not, I mean, it's feasible only based on funding as well.
Okay.
Well, I mean, have we explored some kind of federal grants instead of state grants?
There really aren't any. There's a
Head Start federal program.
The Head Start program, Julie, we did look at that a year ago, but I can't remember what.
What I recall hearing. And when we went, we didn't know whether or not we were getting funded or not. But their program is really different, it did not. Our program did not fit their parameters. We would have needed to make a lot of changes, and they have very stringent requirements around. You know, to serve lunch family style, and you know, the hours that the people could work were different. So it was really. At that time wasn't a fit with our program as it stood, and we were hopeful we were going to get our continued funding.
And weren't we going to also, wouldn't we also still have to contribute towards the funding of it? I mean, it was not going to be a grant that would allow us to partner and therefore not pay.
I guess I just don't understand what is the competitive nature of this grant. If you're servicing a child who is qualifies at risk no matter where they live, what's competitive?
Well, the reduction in the amount of money they had. They made a decision that here's what we have for pre-K and it's not enough. So instead of giving everybody a little bit, mm-hmm. we'll make it a competitive process. I mean, that was just a change in mindset that occurred last year.
What were the priorities and how they
ranked? Can you talk a little bit about that?
They had a criteria that they gave us against which they evaluated your grant. And a lot of it had to do with the type of programming that you were providing in a certain way. Other parts of it had to do with the socioeconomics of your community. And then another piece of it that wasn't specifically in the criteria had to do with how much money you were spending. Like, was your program more expensive, less expensive than others? So it was quite a lengthy application. There were lots of parts to it. It was very narrative heavy. But those are the main things. Karen and I and Stacey all worked on it. One of you remember, Karen?
Well, and I just remember we used the rubric as a guide to write it. So I think we felt pretty confident. But again, it's a narrative, and then the people read it, and it's kind of left open to interpretation that we met. We felt like we were going to meet that criteria to continue, but
that you exceeded.
Yeah.
In all the categories on the rubric.
Did you get any feedback as to why you weren't chosen?
Julie did eventually get some feedback.
Yeah.
And what was the main reason?
Well, our demographics of our community were not as dire as other communities. They also said that our program was more expensive. But yet, you don't do anything that wasn't required. So I'm not sure what that meant.
It felt like you need to financially support it, but then it was held against us because we supported it.
Yes,
they were very contradictory.
It was contradictory. They were very insistent that you need to put down the full cost that was required for a high quality program. And yet they weren't going to partially fund anything. And I did have a conversation with the grant consultant about this because I was a little worried about it. Because I didn't, just didn't contradictory. But that was what we were doing on that.
Well, because you couldn't, it was very hard to determine whether by telling what the full cost of the program was, which would include the district's contribution to the program, was a necessity for them to show our commitment, or whether that would turn out to be, well, that's too much money. So we just wanted to apply for what we had received previously, not including what we actually spent out of district funds for the program, but they advised us to put it all in there.
They instructed us to put it all.
Yeah. So at this point, I mean, the bottom line on that, Steve, is we never heard whether some districts who applied for the grant and who would have gotten it or did get it, but didn't hear until July or August whether they would have even taken the money, because they would have had to plan their budget earlier than that, and if they hadn't received it, could they afford to fund the program without it? And so it did, the structure of it created a bit of a dilemma statewide, with some uncertainty as to whether districts would even accept the grant or would even apply for the grant because of that dynamic and the timing of it. So whether or not, I mean, it looks as though, given the time of the year it is now and we don't have any commitment on pre-K funding, it's going to follow that same pattern that, you're either going to be able to fund the program on your own, or you'll make a decision to disband the program and maybe either make a late determination to bring it back because you got money or just forego it. So, I mean, that's kind of the uncertainty that these kinds of programs place districts in. And that's, you know, I would share my previous experience in another district would be that's how we operated on an annual basis, is every year disbanding programs that were like pre-K and alternative education, and then in August scrambling to hire people and bring them back. And so that's an unfortunate way to, you know, organize a quality educational program. So, we understand that this is a large sum of money.
It's not a trivial amount of money. You say, okay, let's just keep going
right.
with it.
No.
Even however worthy it is.
Right, we understand that.
It needs to be funded by the state. And we kind of said it really benefits the state as a whole because of the nature of the type of student that it helps tends to move around.
Well, it benefits wherever the students move, which
right.
could be the suburban area or... it does, you know, we know that these are our highest risk learners. We know that the research suggests that early intervention is key to getting them to be readers, to be school ready, and to have any hope of closing an achievement gap, you know, or even lessening that achievement gap. So, you know, I think we base our recommendation in that combination of belief in the research as well as our ability to pay at this point in time.
Any other questions?
I sent them to Drew for finance, but I copied Ann and Kara also on some questions that I have, not expecting answers tonight, but just to get them into the mix. And you may have already addressed some of this already, but, you know, I'll just keep them with me and talk to Karen.
We'll bring, we plan to bring this to full board discussion. Is there any direction or any thoughts that you'd like to share that would help us get a sense of where we're headed with this? We are on a somewhat of a timeline because of the process of personnel decisions that would have to be made.
What's
that timeline?
No. What would you see if we did half as many students as we do now? Would that have somewhat the cost, you know, that we... I'm just wondering, you know, as you said, if you're going to do... you might as well do... 80, it's kind of in 40 student increments.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you staff the classroom for the day,
right.
you might as well fill it up.
Correct.
That, do we see, you know, that we really have 80 students? I mean, is there some way we say, well, 40 are really our, you know, we're going to make the best benefit and it's nice to have some extras, fill up the room? Or do we really have 80 students that...
Well, we have a waiting list right now. We have 75 students currently enrolled with two coming in shortly, and we have the other three slots that will be filled immediately following that with students who are on the waiting list. So that is the result of mobility, that those five slots became open. So we fill 80 slots with a waiting list. So if you serve 40 students, you just increase the number of that waiting list. But would we say 40 students is better than no students?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah.
Did you talk, one of my questions was whether or not we could have any alliances with...
We did talk about that.
Did you talk about that?
And we had, Markwart doesn't offer pre-K.
Markwart doesn't offer.
Yeah, I didn't know.
That's what I really would like to know.
But 89 has a pre-K one on their website, and they have mapping for pre-K through 8.
They do the same.
Yeah.
They do the same. They have a blended model like we do.
Yeah.
And when we previously explored joining forces, we didn't... I think, Steve, were you with me when we met with, maybe I just had those meetings with John and myself.
Mm-hmm.
There just didn't seem to be any economic advantage to us And for the space advantage to us, which was another element for us, the location where the students would be taken was definitely not an advantage for us, and that worth, you know, having students be transported that far.
The advantage would be being able to get some extra grant money with, you know, I would think combining students. If it's all paid for by the district, it's hard to see how you're going to get an economy of scale that way, because it's directly correlated. Staff, it looks like, is, you know, 277 plus 78 over 414, and it's a huge percentage of it. So it's, you know, it's staff that's the big expense here.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
But the transportation will probably still remain the same, because geographically you'll probably still need two buses because of just the geography of trying to get the kids across town wherever the location is. So the transportation price will not reduce.
And what about the impact? And again, we don't need to belabor this, because I think there's other stuff, but I'm just thinking, we had that ENL report done 2 years ago or so, 2009, and the pre-K strand in our Churchill program for Spanish was about, you know, having students develop literacy skills in their first language, and then they could move up. So I'm thinking Common Core is pushing more rigorous work down. Do our, you know, I'm just throwing things out, just in terms of how our elementary teachers are seeing any impact, or if not, if there isn't, then certainly that weighs into the decision.
Well, but certainly one less year of schooling in a student who's in an educationally deprived environment has an impact. That's just a reality.
Well, Eric, you bring up a good point, though. When we rolled out the new literacy curriculum, so it's, you know, 5 years, that end of year reading level for kindergarten was about at a B. And after a year, we started to push kindergarten and saying, we really got to get our kids to a C. What's just been released now from the Common Core is that end of year target at kindergarten is an E. Grade, we could get up to an F. We have a half day program. That used to be where we wanted them by mid-first grade. You know, we really, you know, that's asking a lot of kids, and you remove any of that early learning experience. And I know our kindergarten teachers worry, you know, just on a half-day program, those expectations. And by the time you can recover PE, you know, you've got about 90 minutes of reading. Well, can you do something for us?
Dan, you with us?
Yeah, did you say something's burning?
Yeah, we just wanted to alert you. If you hear us all scamper out, it's for a reason.
Plastic burning smell.
Yeah,
that's what makes. I mean, George did the hookup today because the mic was involved.
It's
very.
It's
right here.
Yeah, it's right here.
Is the coffee maker on? Is there something over there?
No, it's really right under the table where Ann and I and Drew are sitting.
Okay.
Don't be worried. Don't be worried, Dan.
Sometimes it's nice not to be present.
Has this been discussed at Lund at all, or any help in that?
It hasn't been discussed at Lund, other than, you know, we probably discussed it more last year when the funding was reduced, and this year, you know, we haven't had any discussions really about it. It seems more like status quo. Mm-hmm. I think the only reference is to what will happen. You know, it's the unknown. Will it come back? Will it not come back? Will it be competitive? Will there be no money?
Yeah, I just, you know, at some point too, it's like, well, if these districts all just start picking it up, then, you know, the state will just, like,
I think that was one of Drew's concerns this morning, as he mentioned.
And it's not fair just because you live a block here or there. You know,
right. Well, as you know, just a few years ago, it was a pre-K for all initiative.
Right.
Right.
That Governor Blagojevich was very, very strong on, and it never got legs, never went anywhere, and totally because of the money.
Yeah. Right.
You know, the cost of it. So, you know, we are sensitive to that. I mean, we absolutely are sensitive to it, but feel also committed to the importance of giving our youngest learners every opportunity when they are most at risk.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious about what our teachers in the really primary first, second grade, is there drawing up into those grade levels. And then as you just described, I knew the Common Core was going to have to affect this in some way, but wasn't sure how.
Yeah, we do.
So it would be, you know, to have some kind of anecdotal conversation around that. You know, as our classrooms get more diverse and we're expecting more really differentiation as we continue to do that, you know, I just see this as a, you know, as a piece of it. Well, Dan, we're trying to figure out what the smell is, so maybe we should...
I think before we conclude, if there is any direction or any perspective that you think is going to be important for us in context setting for the full board, we'd appreciate hearing that, of course.
Maybe the last thing I was thinking of is, you know, I know we're still not doing our budget yet, but mm-hmm. maybe just preliminarily show the impact to that as well. You know, I guess that's the only thing I can think of is, you know, just to show.
Well, we can show you what we've got currently, which, you know, we budgeted full independence of the program this year.
Right. Because I had put down the same type of question: what are the expected cost increases beyond this year? Because we know we budgeted for it, assuming it was going to go away with the funding.
We're thinking it's outside. It may just be coming in through our.
Okay.
There's nothing in the building.
No cars on fire out in the parking lot?
It does smell. I'll back here.
Okay, so there's a fire somewhere near us.
It's probably that fireplace, or they're doing a good barbecue or something.
Our fireplace.
But yes, we can talk about the impact on the budget preliminarily. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts?
Well, this issue around the Common Core and how, if we're making progress, you know, what potential, if any, does this have to impact that, and what adjustments would have to be made. We don't know what our benchmark districts are doing in light of the.
We can do some inquiry. That was one of the questions. I mean, Steve, one of the things Steve asked was, who applied for the grant and didn't get it? Who's having preschool even if they didn't get it? Mm-hmm. And we can look at some of our benchmarks. Remember, now we won't look at all of them because we have 80. Yeah, we have a lot of them. But
there's something we can change to try to win the grant, you know.
Yeah.
Other than our financial aspects of our
issue. Demographics.
Well, another issue with that is that one of the requirements for applying for it for this year was you had to have had it the year before. And that
oh, that's
be
right. So it would be ineligible.
So you're just ineligible now. It's knocked out.
Oh, so once you don't get the grant.
Once you don't get it, you're just not eligible to apply anymore. And that is the thing, unless the funding situation changes. But that's been the other thing that, you know, that I've been trying to confirm with the state. And because they don't know, they're really not confirming anything. But that's my...
This is the State Board of Education that determines it?
Yeah, the Early Childhood Division of the State Board. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like we have to cancel the program to get the grant.
No, because then you wouldn't have been.
Because new programs won't be eligible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only those who have the grant are eligible. So we were eligible to apply for this year, but now that we didn't get it, we're not eligible.
Potentially won't be a thing.
Unless they go more to a block grant again.
Head Start funds?
We've talked. The Head Start program is just a very different program from ours.
From what we're doing here. Well, those are my...
And it would still require us to pay money.
Right. And these are our most at-risk children, and so part of that is socioeconomic, so increasing tuition to offset is...
Well, they don't pay tuition.
Right. We have some tuition.
Those are typically developing students, and they would be students who would go to, you know, preschool, go to...
One of the ones around here, yeah.
You know, you said that after third grade, a third of the students are, what's that?
Somewhere around there. I mean, we could ask Nancy to pull that data a little bit more specifically.
I think that would be helpful. I mean, it seems like we're spending an awful lot of money for a population that goes away.
Most of them
were. That's not my feeling. Is my feeling is it's a state issue. Mm-hmm. State should fund it.
Right. I agree.
Not that.
Right. We have.
They're not.
I mean, there
you
are
know,
children
ours.
When they're here. They are our kids. It's public education. Whoever walks through the door.
This is not a state mandate.
It is not. No. Right. Early childhood is the only state mandate.
Oh, so only part of this is state mandated?
Correct. The early childhood program, which is special education.
Okay.
Early identification of students with identified learning needs are required by state to offer programs, so pre-K through 21. But at risk preschool is that then that next level layer of students who are at risk of failure. But do not qualify for special education services.
And the handout we got is this is strictly
just pre-K.
At-risk pre-K.
That's correct.
EC
that's correct.
Is not.
EC is not included in there.
That's so the do they give us dollars based on bodies in the desk? You know, similar to attendance or whatever.
No, that's not the way the grant was operated.
For the early childhood, or do they just say thou shalt do it and don't give you?
Yeah, thou shalt do it. And then, you know, we get reimbursement from the state for, we have personnel reimbursements and other IDEA funds that help with that early childhood program. But again, not a full, not even close to being paying for that program in full.
Is that reflected on that sheet?
No. We did not include early childhood. We just included the pre-K at risk, the program that's designed for the 80 students.
Oh, okay, so this is just expenses and revenue for just the pre-K.
Just the pre-K.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because that's the only program that's in question.
Right, but when we talk about the six sections, are any of those six early childhood or is there
just all? Remember that we have four classrooms. We have four classrooms that are blended. So they are made up of early childhood students. Those are students identified with special needs and have IEPs, made up of at-risk students, and made up of typically developing students.
Okay. So the nature of our program doesn't strictly keep them separated. There's a blend component.
That's correct. We began that blended program 2 years ago. This is our second year of having that program.
But the cost that you've outlined
are just the
cost. Just to the cost.
Correct. Correct. If you pulled all those children out and we went back to self-contained classrooms, we would. That's what this would cost.
So you've got 75 kids, and our cost is $400,000 a year?
Approximately.
Is that
$435 or something?
$415, something like that. Is this consistent in terms of what that cost? Is that typical in terms of a per student cost?
I think it is, given the requirements that the state places on an early on a pre-K program and what has to be in place for those students, and the fact that you cannot exceed 20 students. So what we were funded by the state. You know, it accelerated as each year, as you look, if you can look at the summary of that, you see that each year we got a little bit more money.
It's $5,500 a student.
On top of, that would be the cost of the students.
Mm-hmm. And that, I guess my question is that is typical of other pre-K.
And it's probably a pretty reasonable cost. You know, when you think about what we spend on a student who's here with us all day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, our whole district expense for students is around 10.
Mm-hmm.
11 something.
Mm-hmm. For a full-time equivalent.
So this is about the same amount of money.
They told you it's a tough sell.
Would the Finance Committee recommend that we do have this posed in a formal way, the discussion next board meeting with a formal vote on retention of the program at the next meeting.
When will we have discussion?
Next meeting.
And then vote?
The following meeting.
One after that. Okay, I heard you collapse that.
So it would be...
First meeting in April.
Yeah, that's probably going to be too late. We probably have to... We'd have to have a special meeting because we have to do personnel before then.
Because there's only one meeting in March.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you think there's any PEP grant, you know, PEP or something that we could, that's targeted just towards early childhood that might be, or immigrant, or refugee or something?
Is there enough money in PEP?
Well, not PEP, but PEP as an organization that can
raise money.
Whatever 501(c) type organization could find out.
If we could raise the money?
Because it's a little different if you're just saying, you know, a public school district wants money. That's different than saying, well, I want to run this program that helps at-risk 3- and 4-year-olds, you know, that would go away. I think that's a little different type of request than just a general school district wanting to do so.
True fundraiser.
Well, I don't feel like I have a sense of what the cost is non-dollar for stopping the program in terms of what, you know, we see the impact in terms of curriculum and all that. And I understand what you're saying too, in terms of statistics of, you know, the mobility rate and kind of moving what you're saying about 50% out, but how is it going to impact our incoming kindergartners without that year under their belt in terms of what we're trying to accomplish already as a district under Common Core and standards and those other pieces. So
I think it's going to be really hard to quantify that.
Yeah.
You know, what happens if you take it away? Well, we can't predict what.
We don't know.
We don't know.
We haven't done it. Yeah, I get that.
I think the state should fund it. I think that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I think if there are no other ideas, we have some sense of interests, concerns, questions that you've raised for us. We'll bring this to our next board meeting.
Okay. Then the final order of business then this evening is I just wanted to give you an update on the 2012 Hadley parking lot. In terms of where that stands, we went out to bid in late January, early February. Those bid documents were originally due back in the middle of March. Because of changes, last minute changes that were required of us by the village, we had to push that bid submittal deadline till tomorrow. So all final bids are due back tomorrow. Then we had anticipated, I sent an email to finance committee members for next Thursday, I believe it is, March 8th, that we have a finance committee meeting at 6 o'clock in the evening. I'll be able to provide you with a complete summary of bids and how that costing all came about. Another update would be, as we went out to bid, we were also running the application procedure through the village, your planning commission in the village, because that's the only way this was really going to work out given the time constraints that we had. Should the bids come back acceptable, we are due to appear before the planning commission, I believe it's on March 23rd, for their approval, and then the village would take action on April 9th. So that's just to give you an update. I'll have final summaries available for you next week, and then we'll bring a recommendation at that March 8th finance committee meeting. Any questions?
Hey Bob, why do we have to, what's the village have to approve first?
Because of the way the lot was originally constructed, we are actually over our property lines. So there's a variance proposal that we have to go through. And that's what we're going through now. The village came back and made some last minute changes, and that's what pushed this final bid submittal deadline out 2 additional weeks to allow vendors, contractors, to be able to respond to those changes.
And we don't have to do anything with Wheaton. We're already got everything square with
them. We're working through with Wheaton too. They're also going to have to work through with their village or their city in terms of some final permitting processes. But we have not received any communication from Wheaton that gives us a sense that this project may be in jeopardy.
Is that only on the Glencoe side?
That's only on the Glencoe side. Stormwater and everything else goes through the village of Glen Ellen. So right now we're okay. We're kind of butting up really the final drop dead timeline because we need eight to 10 weeks to order the stormwater structures, the underground structures. We've already been told they need 8 to 10 weeks for that order in order for us to get it in here in a timely manner to complete this project this summer. Any questions?
No lighting issues with the parking lot?
No, any change that the village has requested of us, we have accommodated their request. We were pretty much told that if we did not adjust our sort of our proposal, that this thing was not going to go forward. So we've gone along with the request.
And Bob, what's the village still planning on working on Hawthorne this summer?
Oh, that's a go. I believe their bid documents are due back first or second week of March, and that project is due to start like the first or second week of April. So they're pretty aggressive. As you know, they're going to be working from Glenbard West all the way almost halfway through our property, and then they'll transition off into Wheaton. But that project is a go.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. That's it for this evening's meeting.